Welcome to the latest FT Advisor Editors podcast with me, Simone Kyriakou, editor of FT Advisor. Today I'm talking to Scottish National Party politician Martin Doherty-Hughes about the issue of mortgage prisoners in the UK. Martin has been a Member of Parliament for West Dunbartonshire since 2015 and has been campaigning for fairness across all aspects of British life. In recent years, he's been working to help tens of thousands of mortgage prisoners in the UK and has recently brought a bill before Parliament to alleviate their plight. Welcome, Martin.
Hello, how are you?
I'm grand, thank you.
You've got me in a wee bit of a dungeon, by the looks of it, underneath the FT here.
Well, when you say dungeon, let's just say, you know, it's not sort of chains and clanking chains and rats, but
it's chic. I'd say it's Scandinavian chic.
Chic, well, we'll bunker. Go with that. Yeah, it's a chic bunker, you know.
Chic bunker.
Just in case anything happens, we're safe in a bunker, so I hope listeners are okay with that. We're in a safe bunker. Don't worry about it. But before we get into our discussion on mortgage prisoners, I think it's just useful to have a bit of background for listeners. So, as we know, the mortgage prisoners are people who have been unable to sell their home because they owe more on their mortgage than their home is worth. And this kind of can happen for a number of reasons, such as a decline in house price values, a change in circumstances, or a job loss. But the particular mortgage prisoners we've been focusing on for the past year or so in FT Advisor are those who've been stuck in their properties since the financial crisis of 2008. And this is because their lenders, such as Northern Rock, went under, got bailed out, bought out, and brought into other lenders' closed books. Through no fault of their own, these borrowers have been disbarred from remortgaging onto lower rates. They've seen their loans increase month after month, even when the bank base rate was at an all-time record low. Now, according to the Financial Conduct Authority, there are an estimated 275,000 mortgage prisoners in the UK. And those were the 2022 figures. And while this might not sound like a huge proportion of the UK adult population, there are concerns this number could rise in the coming years as interest rates have risen and house prices might be set to fall. Martin.
Hello.
How did you get involved with mortgage prisoners?
Really straightforward. I had a constituent, Chris Dorn, from Dintoker, which is a village in West Dunbartonshire. Known Chris's family for a long time. His mum was a great stalwart of the local community. She actually helped set up the first ever credit union in Scotland, the first in the UK, having a kind of background in the credit unions in Ireland, which I was a member of. So comes from a family about, you know, good, prudent financial management. And suddenly he came to me about 18 months ago and said, this is my situation. And I started to dig into it because it just seemed odd. I just thought, how is this possible? And lo and behold, I suddenly came across the Mortgage Prisoners Campaign Group, read a lot more about it, and I think they were just scandalised and wanted to take up Chris's case. And that's how I became involved. A straightforward constituency issue impacting one of the people who I represent as a constituency MP.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one person is sort of emblematic of a much wider problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was alluding to you earlier on this morning that I actually could have been a mortgage prisoner. My husband and I took out a Northern Rock mortgage. It was the only one that we could afford at the time. Similar types of background to Chris. And it was the only way to get onto the property market to purchase our own home. And luckily for us, just at the crash, we were moving our mortgage. So we did not become mortgage prisoners. And I think the old saying, you know, there go I, but for the grace of God. And it certainly could have been us sitting in a house, not able to move on and being in a similar situation, not only to Chris, but to over 200,000 people across these islands.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk a little bit about the consequences. What are the consequences of being a mortgage prisoner? Because we know it can have a number of negative consequences, such as financial stress or inability to move for a job or other opportunity, and maybe difficulty accessing credit. But what are the sort of perhaps almost non-quantifiable consequences that you've seen in your work with people? What sort of impact is this having on their lives?
Giving up the job, or not giving up a job, should I say people doing two or three jobs, to basically to keep paying the interest and trying to maintain some type of family life. And you'll have someone, for example, who might be in their 50s or 60s, is now becoming a carer to parents. and the additional stress that that puts on your life, that you are now paying 12, 15% on top of your mortgage. So when everyone else, we were rightly concerned about interest rates over the last while, if you're a mortgage prisoner, you've been at that for a long time. And that is just the norm. And you are literally keeping your head above water. You know, you're not going on what some people call the normal things, going on a family holiday, taking a couple of days off. You can't afford to. If you're wanting to feed your kids, you've got the cost of living crisis, energy bills going through the roof, and then you've got the cost of trying to maintain your home. And you find the vast majority of mortgage prisoners do not default on their mortgages. So there is sometimes a narrative from some people that mortgage prisoners are, just made a wrong choice or, they're bad at what they do. It's nothing to do with the mortgage prisoners. These were ticked off by the Financial Conduct Authority, by the then Labour government, consecutive Conservative governments. And literally these people are not defaulting. They're keeping their head above water and they've got no time to do anything else.
Mm. And I sometimes see comments on our stories and on other stories saying, well, why don't they just downsize when they sell the property and downsize? But, I think if it were as easy as that, they'd have done it, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think you'd find over 200,000 folk would have downsized. Just a ridiculous situation. These people are locked into these properties. There is no escape, hence mortgage prisoners.
Absolutely. And so what are you then hoping to achieve politically since you started getting involved with this?
I suppose the first issue is to represent my constituent, and Chris isn't the only one. A lot more have started to come forward in West Dunbartonshire, and also to highlight the ongoing issue of the possible, huge impact on homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who will now start to lose their homes over the next, say, 18 months, and that will have a profound impact on the housing market. But it will mostly has a profound impact on families and individuals and whose homes they were. So if you've been paying your mortgage and maintaining those really high interest rates, what's actually happening is the company that now holds your book, will then take your property off you, gain the value of that property by all the money that you've been paying, and then selling it and making a double profit. That to me is theft.
Yeah, and it's hard for people to even track who owns it, because you might be owned by Heliodor, but actually, no, that's owned by Topaz, and that's a trading name of
somebody else.
For example, and you find it hard to actually know who to speak to. And this is even as a journalist, who are we meant to be speaking to? Who's a press officer that we need to be speaking to actually get comments and write replies on these things?
A lot of your colleagues in investigative journalism have been finding it very complex, very difficult to try and get to the bottom about who is in ownership here. And if it's offshore, it becomes even more complex.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, my concern, not only for my individual constituents, is to bring this to a conclusion. That was why I was trying to bring forward the private members bill. And, I know that that won't become legislation. I know that. But what part of it is to have these discussions, to have these chats so that people working in financial services will understand what a mortgage prisoner is, the impact on them, but also the impact on the housing market. I want these mortgage prisoners to come back into the mortgage market. They're valuable customers. They're paying their way. If you're offering mortgages, these are the kind of people you want, because they have really went beyond and above to maintain their own credit and to make sure that they continue to pay their mortgages in very, very difficult circumstances.
Now, you said that the bill won't become legislation, but how has it been received so far by your peers in Parliament?
It's interesting. This has been going on a really long time. Since the financial crash. And I've talked to colleagues and they have been like, oh, we thought that had gone away.
Mm.
And I'm like, you're kidding. And then when you talk to someone who is a mortgage prisoner, it doesn't matter where in these islands they come from, it's sometimes what they'll get is just a general central research response. Thank you very much for your inquiry. The Chancellor's looking into this. These were, blah, blah, blah. And you're just kind of, there seems to be an utter disconnect. And I just don't understand how that's happened. I mean, if you look at the scandal of the post office scandals, so many other scandals, there are over 200,000 people and families in the UK who could be homeless within 18 months and whose financial value as far as I'm concerned, is being stolen by these companies, and they will accredit double value on those homes.
So this sounds like a really big thing for all parties to be tackling this election year.
I would have thought so. I did ask the Prime Minister at a PMQ a couple of months ago about mortgage prisoners, and you know, he alluded to the Chancellor's looking into this, not one mention in the spring budget. And when I had a Westminster Hall debate, which is kind of like having a debate in the real House of Commons chamber, it's the same rules, you know, you can say, technically say what you want, I suppose. You know, you get the government minister summing up, but you also have the official opposition in the Labour Party. And when they were summing up in my debate, I pushed them. I mean, you hope to be in government. What's your answer to this? And it was vacuous. And there was no real response about what they were trying to achieve if they become the next UK government. I found that extremely disappointing.
That is disappointing to hear, because you would hope that the politicians have been sort of taking this forward, like yourselves, like the all-party parliamentary group that's been sort of looking into it. But I don't know. I mean, is this like the power of backbenchers then to keep the debate going?
I would hope so. My concern is that they don't see the value of it, because you will find a lot of mortgage prisoners have a sense of shame. And they shouldn't have a sense of shame. This is not their fault. And, you know, if I were coming into, you know, if you're in government in the UK and you had the opportunity to change regulations, I think the market would be crying out for these types of people to come back into the mainstream mortgage market, because they are valuable in the sense that they are maintaining their mortgages even under such atrocious conditions. And I think that would bolster the mortgage market and would be very good for it. And I just think that is part of why I'm continuing to campaign for it, is to make sure that as many members across all the political parties recognise this. My concern is, with everything else that's going on, the issues around the economy, and I know you don't want to talk about the Brexit word, but the impact on the economy, I think this can be part of the answer.
Yeah.
Certainly not an answer to Brexit, but it's an answer to about creating stability within the mortgage market and bringing these types of people back into it.
Absolutely. And when you talk about stability in the mortgage market, I mean, this is something that the regulator, the Financial Conduct Authority, has been looking into. Well, I mean, you say let's not go there. I mean, I'm going to go there for the interests of the listeners. We've got consumer duty regulations revolving around closed book providers coming in shortly. And we're hoping that the providers will then look at their closed books, which should encapsulate mortgages, mortgage prisoners. When I spoke to a spokesperson for the UK Mortgage Prisoners Campaign Group, though, she said they will obviously try and get some way around it by saying like they'll offer advice to speak to debt advisors or to MAPS, or that they're free to move to another lender at any time, which seems to be their go-to statement when quizzed. But it's actually going to be interesting for them to be scrutinised as how consumer duty will affect them when they do not offer fairer, affordable mortgage products. I mean, this sounds very cynical. It sounds like, you know, people have been given these same answers all the time. I know when I've spoken to mortgage prisoners and they've been told you can move to another lender, they've tried to. Another lender say, no, you're a mortgage prisoner. You stay where you are. Is consumer duty going to help? Is her cynicism justified?
It's cynicism, yeah, definitely justified. I think the Financial Conduct Authority, I think it needs a couple of things. First of all, it needs proper investment to enable it to do its job. And whatever the next government looks like, if they want to take financial conduct seriously, you need to invest in public scrutiny. I'm an old-fashioned social democrat. And I think that the state has value and worth. We're all participants in it. But if you want it to work for the benefit of everybody, and that includes private enterprise and the mortgage market, you need to invest in good governance. I don't think anybody would doubt that. I would hope people don't doubt that. And I think to play its part, Financial Conduct Authority certainly needs a lot more investment to enable to do its job. I think part of the problem here is that they are very underfunded and literally are just finding it too complex to do major projects. And it will be up to the next government to try and bolster them and to enable them as a proper financial conduct authority to do its job properly. And I think there is, inside the FCA, a real clamour for that. I hope there is, to do good public duty. And that will be the benefit not only of the individuals that I represent as mortgage prisoners, but I think to the benefit of the market.
And it's interesting you say that. I mean, the FCA has identified what sort of 27 million UK adults could be sort of vulnerable or financially vulnerable, at least at some stage in their lives, if not currently. If you're sort of wrapping, you know, these sort of 275,000 mortgage prisoners into that, I mean, we're looking at kind of everything here. People, you mentioned sort of increased homelessness, which is a startling thing to think of, but, you know, the wider impact on the family, the possibility of losing jobs, so joblessness, job statistics will sort of worsen. I mean, the whole thing sort of seems like a political disaster waiting to happen, a regulatory disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some of your colleagues interviewing a former prime minister the other day, and I think, you know, kind of what the UK has been through recently since 2016 has created immeasurable instability, not just politically, but in society. And that has a profound impact for the long-term viability of a political state.
Mm.
Try not to be overly political.
Well, I mean, it's hard when things are so bad for someone that they have to go to their politician and their local constituency MP and say, can you help me? I'm at my wit's end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a political issue.
It is. I mean, you know, and I'm not going to beat about the bush here. I'm a member of the Scottish National Party. I think my country should be independent. I'm an old-fashioned Northern European social democrat. I think the state has value and worth. I think we should be in the European Union, the family of European nations, and, you know, bolstering our democratic credentials. I just think since 2016, what you've seen is a tirade of reactionary politics, which has grasped some kind of zeitgeist, you know, promising some type of, you know, post-Britannica, you know, utopia.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the real world.
No, but it's pandering. See, I think modern democracy, certainly in the UK, seems to be not so much a democracy, but only a democracy for, like, a sort of a very small majority.
Yeah, indeed.
Majority.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who sits in the House of Commons, I'm part of that political elite. Totally get that. I try and remain grounded. I think my 90-year-old father would make sure I remain grounded. And, you know, you do see that, especially in the Westminster system. I mean, last night we were voting on the Rwanda bill, which I and my party are opposed to. I think it's a draconian and an awful piece of legislation. That, of course, weirdly, has now went back to the House of Lords.
Mm.
And it's strange for me to be sitting here saying that the House of Lords is doing a good thing by trying to combat what the government's doing, because the House of Lords is unelectable, it's unaccountable. And it's just an extraordinary situation for, you know, a political state which says it's some great democratic institution, when at the heart of its legislative process is an unelected, unaccountable chamber where 90 people are in it because, you know, their great-grandfather 20 times back chopped somebody's head off. But to bring that back to mortgage prisoners, I think that there is a kind of a link to all of that, and about, you know, deference and, oh, don't worry about it, the FCA have got it covered, the politicians have got it covered. They haven't, and if they did, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Mm.
And I think that's the crux, that, you know, the Treasury is not taking it seriously, or they just don't want to, because they know that at this moment in time there is no political will to make the serious change that's required.
Yeah. So do you think that there is a sort of safeguarding now that the issue has been raised and people have become more aware of it? Do you think there is a bit more safeguarding now to prevent this sort of thing happening again? Or are we just on the precipice of just another...
I don't see any change.
Mm.
And, you know, my private, you know, when I had my adjournment, not my Westminster Hall debate last year, it really was trying to seek at least some very basics. You know, let's put a cap on the interest levels. Let's, you know, make sure that people have access to financial services. And please, can you give serious consideration to opening these books up and freeing these people and getting them back as good mortgage holders in a more sustainable mortgage market? And, you know, I just don't see anyone taking that seriously. And I'm just dumbfounded. I mean,
I'm a kind of politician who believes that social housing should be the real gist of, you know, how we look at housing in the future. It's not to say that I don't believe that owning your own property, the bank owns my home. But what it does say to me is that we're not valuing the vast majority of mortgage prisoners who didn't have the money to put down huge deposits, who come from backgrounds where, you know, financial management was essential to make sure you had food on the table. And I think of people like Chrissy's mum, Rose Dornan, who saved many lives in my community by making sure there was a credit union to give people access to credit. And I think we need to have a real review and look back at what it means to have, say for instance, back to the Financial Conduct Authority, but one that which has actually got teeth and does its job properly. But you need to invest in it. It costs money.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's about choices about where you spend your money.
That's true. And this also goes back to sort of how the FCA is funded, because our listeners, our readers, being financial advisors, like 99.99% of them pay very high fees and they've caused no problems. You know, they've not had any complaints. They've always done the absolute very best for their clients. And it does feel kind of very disjointed that something that's meant to have a public service in protecting the UK consumer is sort of paid for by effectively the private sector.
The sector of financial advisors are in some ways casualties of this as well, not just the mortgage prisoners. And that's because of some political judgment about creating a more liberalised market. And look where we end up. You know, it's not the end of capitalism if you believe in good propriety and financial management. I bet I thought that makes you a good capitalist because you know what's happening with your money. And you know, I say that as an old-fashioned social democrat. But, you know, you've got to have a balance. And that balance allows people to have a credible understanding of good financial management, that the FCA is doing its job, and that financial advisors, you know, when they were giving out, say, Northern Rock mortgages, I took one, and my financial advisor was in no worse a position than me, or no better a position in terms of understanding that this mortgage that I and my husband took had been ticked off by the FCA, ticked off by the UK government. It was a good mortgage.
And now financial advisors are seeing sort of a talk, discussion in the press and among sort of industry participants about sort of 90% mortgages, 95% mortgages. And again, they're starting to question. They're saying, look, are you sure this is a really good idea? We've kind of been here before. It would be great if people listened to financial advisors a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, they're starting to sound like me. I think the market really, or housing needs a range of options. As I said, I think that, you know, look at some of our European counterparts, notably in places like Germany, where there is a far more pluralistic approach to what either home ownership or social housing or private rented sector looks like. And I think we've just, you know, I need to be slightly political here, I'm afraid, that Thatcherite agenda that home ownership is the best thing since sliced bread. Bread comes in many different forms. And I think that just putting all your eggs in one basket in terms of that approach, that political, philosophical approach, creates long-term difficulties. And there should certainly be more plurality in the type of housing that we provide and creating more social housing. I'm a member of the Scottish National Party. We are in government in Scotland. We have ended the right to buy. I think that is a good thing. It's not saying you're stopping people buying private property. You know, you invest with home builders, private builders. You create that equity in terms of different approaches to housing. And
But you can look at the graphs that show sort of UK housing. Certainly I've looked at the ones for England and Wales. I haven't looked at the ones for Scotland recently. But you can see sort of local authorities used to be like the biggest house builders, 50s, 60s, 70s, suddenly 80s, right to buy comes in. That really tails off. And local authority housing has kind of fallen way down in terms of building quality, affordable sort of rental properties for people. And the private construction companies have absolutely taken off. You know, we had the Resolution Foundation report a few weeks ago, which said that the UK has got the lowest amount of decent, affordable social housing. The private rental sector is one of the worst in Europe. The floor space is lower than elsewhere in Europe. And we have one of the lowest potentials for affordability across the whole of Europe. And it sort of makes you think, you know, people, renters, are paying over the odds for smaller cramped conditions than our European counterparts. People who have borrowed are paying more to pay off their loans than our European counterparts for less quality housing. And maybe we need to free up local authorities to build more decent accommodation. Everyone has a right to a home. Mm-hmm. Not everyone necessarily has to have a right to a mortgage, okay? Maybe we've sort of bought into a myth here.
For us in Scotland, at least for my own political party, which is in government, that is why, you know, as a social democrats, we think that the right to buy had, you know, seen its day and it was time to stop. You know, you are selling off the family investment. It's just crazy financial management. And you were creating a situation where people were getting into more debt to maintain their mortgages. And it's not to say that just social housing, whether it be housing association or local authority housing, is the complete answer, but to have a slightly more complex market. And, you know, what we have found in Scotland is an increase in registered social housing construction, one of the largest programmes, I think, in the last 40 years. It's not enough. We need to go further. I mean, there's always ways to go. But I think, you know, for people living in England and Wales, you do have... People need to start pressuring the politicians. You've got an election coming up, which, of course, we're all going to participate in. But I would say to people in England and Wales, you're voting for political parties which believe or do not believe in ending the right to buy. And I think if you look across specifically a whole raft of areas in England and some of the old great counties, you'll see many of the inner, you know, problems in boroughs across England is because you have mismanagement in that old rental sector. Communities failing because there is a lack of community and a sense of ownership. Old council houses are now rented out on short-term lets, very expensive. Some person owns a whole street, all that sort of stuff. When I was a former councillor in Glasgow and represented a part of my ward was called Townhead, and in Townhead I would be chatting a lot to folk and someone in a private rent in a former council flat and are paying $1,500 a month for a two-bedroom, and that was in Glasgow, in that part of Glasgow specifically. And I just couldn't get my head around it. And it was because they were close to two universities.
Right. School districts.
You know, it really, really impacts how a community continues to exist. You want diversity there. You want real grounded communities that can invest both time and passion and commitment, as well as in financial security. And you do want a private rented market. Of course you do. You want to bring a wee bit of diversity every now and then. But these communities become untenable in the long term if that's your continued approach to housing. And that's how you end up and will continue to end up with a situation where we have mortgage prisoners.
And, you know, the advisors that we've spoken to on FT Advisor, a lot of them say, you know, they've been doing a bit of pro bono work to help mortgage prisoners. Is there light at the end of the tunnel? And if so, how can financial advisors and financial services professionals help point people towards a solution if there's no sort of regulatory or political willpower to impose a solution? How can advisors kind of help signpost people towards...
I think there's a couple of things. To financial advisors listening, I'd say, first of all, if anyone who comes to you is a mortgage prisoner in the off chance, please send them on to Mortgage Prisoners Campaign Group. They have a Facebook page. It's run by volunteers, people who are mortgage prisoners. And they are, you know, some of the best people to advise you about what to do next as a campaign group and to put political leverage. I would also say to financial advisors that there is political leverage if you, as an industry, say to this government and any next government, get your finger out. We want to create stability. We think these people are worth being mortgage holders in the market. What are you doing about it? You know, if you're a financial advisor out there and you're accredited to a financial advisory body, you know, start talking to your body and telling them to put political pressure on government. Go and talk to your own MP about it say that you want more credibility in the market, you're wanting these people back in the market, you think they're good investors, they're going to be good mortgage holders, because they are, as I said, they are paying their way through very difficult times. And if you're in the mortgage business, I would have thought these are the kind of people you want. So anyone comes to you, please send them on to the Mortgage Prisoners Advice Campaign Group. Mm. And more importantly, as a citizen yourself, get involved. Talk to your MP, go and visit them at their surgery. That's something a lot of MPs find quite difficult. Don't just email them. Go talk to them, make an appointment. I want to chat to you about this. You're my elected representative. And get your representative bodies to put pressure on the government. Talk about it as a representative body, as a collection of mortgage advisors and financial advisors. Get involved. You know, this impacts you and your industry.
Mm, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for that. Clearly, mortgage prisoners are in a difficult situation right now. And with the way things are economically, it's possible we might see some more mortgage prisoners, sadly, as the years unfold. But we're hoping that there will be stronger political and maybe even regulatory impetus if the consumer duty regulations have teeth. And hopefully, well, we might not see any definitive action this election year, but hopefully we'll see some more definitive political action in the years to come. For now, Martin, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us. And thank you all for listening. Until next time, take care.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.